Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we're not going to review Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw. Less than 2 weeks to go till WrestleMania, Hamflett. What did you make of this week's show?
Such a weird one. Like, I got the feeling on this episode, more than a lot of the ones recently, that they were actually attempting to take WrestleMania seriously. That big sign that hangs over the ring, that hangs over all the wrestlers, sort of Damocles that it is for most of them, that they're trying to take the show seriously. But it's too little too late, for one. You cannot just all of a sudden take everything seriously with 2 weeks to go, and you should have been doing that the entire time. You should do it the entire calendar year if it is indeed the big annual payoff that you pretend it is. And I don't know, like, all of WWE is still such a cartoon now that even when the wrestlers try and be earnest and serious and everything, I'm discounting the opening segment, which I genuinely can't wait to talk about. I'm talking about the rest of the show and all the other angles. Like, even when they're trying to be serious, they are made such cartoon characters all the year round. So much of what they do is so irrelevant that it feels phony and it feels forced. And none of the serious stuff, none of the big time stuff, none of the important stuff feels like it really is the biggest night of their career. They can't just steal WrestleMania hype, because 1 week they try and decide to give all these characters agency all at the same time. Thought it made Chicago crowd were hot for almost everything, which creates this sort of weird tonal dissonance as well. It's just a very, very strange evening, I thought.
Without jumping ahead too far, so I'll keep my overall thoughts on the show brief, but it was a show-long runner angle about Seth Rollins and his quest to get to WrestleMania. It's even worse than it was on paper and has been executed in the previous weeks in terms of how they decided to do it this week. The premise is stupid. It's a self-own on WWE's part, but they are, of course, too stupid to realize that. And they did it in an even dumber way later on in the night. So I thought this was pretty garbage, with the obvious exception of something fantastic, which we're going to get out of the way early.
Indeed. Let's dive straight into it then, because Raw opened with the glass-shattering Stone Cold Steve Austin's music hit. The bloody roof came off the place. People are hands on their head, chucking babies in the air. They can't believe what's happening. And then, of course, Kevin Owens walks out with a bald cap on, knee braces, jean shorts, and an Austin 316 shirt. And the noise, the way that noise transformed. Do you remember when Miz did it once and he came out as The Rock? And weirdly, it took people a few, like 10 seconds, let's say, to work out when he'd physically walked through. Wait a second, that's not The Rock. It's fairly definitive, the difference between Stone Cold and Kevin Owens. So this was an instantaneous shift in noise from a huge beb to just, oh, you gits, basically. You've got us. Owens is just milking this. He's got it down. I saw that clip of him from years ago doing the rounds again on Twitter the other day, and it made me laugh so much, where he talks about playing with his action figures. Have you seen this clip? Playing with his action figures, and he's got all the music queued up for making the entrance, but for Stone Cold, he wants it to be special. So he doesn't chuck a glass against the wall, because that would make sense. He chucks a mug, and the mug just puts a dent in the wall, and then he twist ending reveals he was 17 when he was doing that. So yeah, understandably, he's got the Austin accent and physical display down to a T. He does all the catchphrases. He does the what. The crowd are chanting "You suck," and basically, he's sort of half pretending to be Austin, and then half going, "I'm not Austin. I'm Kevin Owens, really." Because he said, "Oh, I didn't do much thinking when I accepted the WrestleMania invite. I just sort of came out on a bloody stupid golf cart in the middle of nowhere to try and like act cool." But then he says, "Actually, yeah, Austin's just not really doing a lot of thinking these days. The lights are on. No one's home." We get the double fake out. The crowd are chanting, "We want Austin." This time the glass shatters again, and he goes, "You stupid bastard." Of course it's not Austin coming to interrupt a fake Austin. The old "fool me once, fool me twice" sort of gimmick goes on here, and Owens laughs and calls them idiots, and he again just shoots on Stone Cold Steve Austin, then goes to do the old beers with Stone Cold's lagers, of course. And by the way, if you like beer, what a chance this is. We've got a beer. We've got our very own YPA called Michael Sidgwick.
Clickbait thumbnail.
Who came up with that?
Me.
Oh, yeah. You can order it right now at topropebrewing.com. Unfortunately, this only applies to our non-American listeners, or European listeners. You can go and check it out right now. 10 fantastic beers, including our very own. 45 quid all in, free shipping if you enter the code "Here's Why" at checkout, and they will be with you in time for WrestleMania. But anyway, Owens is calling for beers, but he misses the ones, or they don't fall in his hands. He drops them or whatever, and he's pissed off at this stagehand who can't throw the beer. They shouldn't have sacked the bloke who used to throw it Stone Cold, probably.
Nope.
But he says, "Oh, you must have, you've got not very good arm. You must be from bloody..." Checks back of guitar. "Oh, Chicago, that must be where you're from." And he gets him to come in the ring and, of course, hits him with a stunner and then pours beer on him. Hamflet, you seem eager to talk about this.
This is absolutely fantastic. WWE are a sports entertainment company and they can barely do the thing that they basically patented and invented right anymore. And it's just such a treat when they do the thing that they can do right. The wrestler comes out dressed as another wrestler. The wrestler trolls the audience in the most satisfying way. It doesn't matter that almost all of this segment, and this is rare for WWE, so often they try and do a greatest hits package of other segments that it feels far too much like a cover than to be its own original. This somehow wasn't that. I don't know if it's just Kevin Owens' ability to elevate bad material, but you straight away mentioned the comparison to when The Miz did this as The Rock. There's, of course, the one when you get the second music tease of Shawn Michaels teasing out both Hogan and Bret Hart in Montreal. And yet, none of this felt like an ill-fitting tribute, but something that Kevin Owens would absolutely do to one of Steve Austin's favourite crowds at this exact point on their own individual road to WrestleMania as well. It's so hard to play with the tropes of WWE and the tropes of sports entertainment and still make them authentic and still make them entertaining. And this was all of that. And regardless of your like subjective takes on the scripted material he was given, or indeed Owen's impression of Steve Austin, you judge this most of all by the noise. So as you like beautifully articulated, that crowd immediately switching to just pure bilious hatred for what they were seeing versus what they thought they were about to get when Owens walked through that doorway. And then, not just for me, like obviously the second tease was great and it was received as such by fans that were yet again pissed off that they'd been had by this complete arsehole. But for me, it was the laughter when he dropped the cans, because they were so furious with him for getting too over on them that they just thought, "Ah, we finally got one over than him because he's dropped the cans." And of course, he's dropped the cans to be able to set up an excuse to stun this guy. Even that is Kevin Owens having the audience on strings, because the cheer that went out was actually satisfaction of a heel seemingly suffering in the moment. You were witnessing a WWE crowd reacting to the storyline, to the character, and absolutely nothing else. And that in itself felt like a bit of a collector's item.
In Chicago, no less.
Yeah, a total treat of a road to WrestleMania bit of sports entertainment. Couldn't have loved this more.
This was easy money done well. This is an easy old standard at this point in WWE canon, and they executed it tremendously. The one thing I really want to put over, in addition, like Kevin Owens looked like an imbecile. He looked so stupid, but it worked so well because in his head, he thinks by dressing up with like the actual big that he's making it look like Austin looks stupid. In reality, Kevin Owens looks like a fool, and he's the one who thinks he isn't. It worked on every single level imaginable. The prosthetics looked so poor, but all the better for looking poor. He was completely deluded. His manipulation of the crowd was exceptional. His reaction to the second fake out got them twice. Of course, he got fed fans twice, but it was still nice to see. He got them twice. The thing that struck me, right, that I really, really want to put over, because it wasn't just usually you just put over the talent and more often than not, their ability to do something incredible or even very, very good in spite of the WWE system. For once, this was the WWE system, even WWE production working in harmony with its talent. And it's funny when they actually care and they can actually do this together, how much better it is. The opening shot of this show was absolutely incredible. The point of view of the camera, the position of the camera, if you remember at the very start of the broadcast, captured every single available fan from one single vantage point. Focused on the Tron all the way back, making sure that the full house was there. And they never do that. They reserved that special shot for what they teased being a special moment. So when you saw that shot and you heard that iconic glass shatter, you thought, oh, Christ, it's Austin. It's Austin, because they picked the perfect camera angle to make it seem like this huge moment that literally everyone visible on camera was going to love and react very enthusiastically to. Cut to Kevin Owens. Just brilliant, brilliant production choice by WWE here.
Yeah, I just got to reiterate both of what you said there. I thought a brilliant opening to Monday Night Raw. And I've rewatched the clip about three or four times. I think Alex McCarthy of TalkSport shared it in isolation. And they're like, oh my God, he's here. And then there's like the head slap of like a face palm of like, because like afterwards, you sit there and go, yeah. Think about the atmosphere. I mean, that'd be a great surprise, but it's modern WWE. They'd say, or they'd at least bloody tease something on social media. But the fact they got them twice, yes, it's great stuff. And Kevin Owens just fumbling the beers just added to it all as well. Right, we go to the back, and there is Seth Rollins with, Kevin Patrick! Who asked him about the fact he's not going to WrestleMania. They actually did some Cody chants this week, Sidge.
It only took them, a month and a half to finally get the gist? Jesus Christ.
And he's not happy about the question that Kevin's asked him. So Seth Rollins just steals the microphone and leaves. And then we get the Mysterios versus, I'll never get tired of saying this, NXT champion Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, who we're going to be talking about later on the NXT preview, What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from.
Two podcasts with Bobby Roode content.
Anyway, early on. They hit dives in the Mysterios, and Seth Rollins' music's hit, and he comes out, and he's insisting he wants a spot at WrestleMania, something arguably even bigger than Austin. He's got a plan, but his mic gets cut off. And he storms off, and the match just continues. Ray makes a comeback, tags in Dominic. Dominic's got Roode pinned, but Ziggler breaks it up. So then Dominic hits a cutter on Ziggler. Roode hits him with a spinebuster, but Dominic fights back, puts him in position. 619, frog splash, 1, 2, 3. And then it's all going on here. Post-match, Ziggler super kicks Dominic. Miz hits Ray Mysterio with a skull-crushing finale and unmasks him to the chagrin of the Chicago crowd. And Ray covers his face, and Dom gets his daddy a towel, so they don't see his face. And what a shocking conclusion to this match!
No, this is a 9-minute match that I'll never remember for a million years. Mostly competently worked, except Dominic Mysterio still looks like he's trying to remember what to do instead of just being able to do it. At this point, he's been doing this long enough where it's like, is he going to be any good? I don't think so. How are you in a dojo, for God's sake? Stop being arrogant. Realize that you're useless at this.
Yeah.
Accept that they're probably better off developing experience elsewhere and getting reps in front of different kinds of audiences, because this system isn't working for too many people. Yeah, Dominic looked lost on occasion or sloppy and just generally taking me out of the match. I've seen Reyes. In contrast to the opening segment where, like, done infrequently, I will be catnip for a fake out. Rey Mysterio getting his mask taken off. I've seen it a million times. It doesn't really scan as a sacrilegious thing anymore, particularly because he's no longer really booked like this legend, where it feels like sacrilegious to remove his mask as iconography, because he's not really an icon on WWE TV these days. So, yeah, none of this works.
I've seen like mattress showrooms less comfortable than Dominic Mysterio's cut a look to take. Jesus Christ, that kid is gentle with his offense. And we see a lot of this on NXT 2.0, and I don't know, just jaws agape at the idea that these people would be permitted to wrestle on television. This isn't even the developmental, this is Raw. He's got to get better. And I think, you know, like, we're in a position where we get to be critics, and I think at this point, I'm not going to speak for Cedric, but I certainly feel like I've been gentle on Dominic Mysterio's development. He got given quite a wide berth off the back of having to start in a pandemic. It was a strange period to start as a wrestler. They position him like he's 12, as Cedric is the large adult son. Like, he's not, he's 26, 27, or whatever he is. There's like, his own dad had been doing it about 13 years at this point and had already developed a legacy that, like, is still talked about today by the time he was Dominic's age. So it's okay to treat him like any other wrestler and ask for a little bit more from his ability and from his development. Yeah, the mask stuff didn't really work for me, but the way the wrestlers were selling it, I think I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for a week, because I think they're going to make Logan Paul, like, tit around in that mask. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be, like, incredibly that is, in the way that this doesn't really scan as anything, that is going to scan as supremely disrespectful. And I think that, like, the way Miz was holding that up, I was like, you're going to take that to your awful friend. And I think that's going to play quite well.
There's your line for Miz. A lot of people saying to me, unmasking Rey Mysterio last week was disrespectful. And speaking of people who know a lot about being disrespectful, the man who filmed in a suicide forest is Logan Paul, ladies and gentlemen. That's what they're going to do. Yeah, that's what actually happened later. Miz was backstage, I presume with Maurice rather than Logan, talking about taking Rey's mask. Love you. When Gilbert Plattock interrupts and asks him why he took his mask. And Miz says, well, Logan Paul grew up as a huge fan of Rey Mysterio, but you should never meet your heroes. And, well, Mysterio's a bellend, basically. And Miz is happy to humiliate them, and he dares Logan Paul to wear the mask on Raw next week.
Well, I don't want to piss on Hamlet's chips here, because I love that pitch. But wasn't it the case 1 week ago, 2 weeks ago, where Logan Paul was, like, reluctant to play the heel and bury Cleveland alongside the Miz? Aren't they running this idiotic storyline where Logan Paul actually likes the Mysterios a bit more than the Miz, really? Are they going to babyface an actual IRL heel because they're so incompetent?
Well, WWE is the place where a Paul brother is afraid of the heat.
Yes. Yes. Or a place so incompetent that they receive genuinely horrendous people as the babyfaces because they do things that...
Maybe
you know what? Stupid thing we do, and you're an idiot for liking.
Oh my god!
Maybe
I've just had a brainwave. Sorry, Hamlet, you were saying something there.
Well, no, but I had one too. I wonder if we've happened upon the same point. Maybe he is in such reverence of the Mysterios, like the Paul brothers are obsessed by YouTube numbers. Maybe they've seen the stats from last week, and he's going to answer Omos's open challenge and just be like, "Sorry, I've got something better. I'll have that."
Maybe they've seen the numbers that Rey Mysterio does on the Defiant channel. It's absolutely incredible.
It is.
Before I finish, can I just borrow that pen quickly?
You can.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to take sharp things away from Sid quickly because I'm pitching a double turn at WrestleMania. Logan Paul turns babyface. Dominic Mysterio turns heel, aligns himself with Miz, and takes over Damian Mizdow's gimmick and becomes Dominic Mysterio. Hello.
Will Born, I love it. But I think I'm going to need a clearer visual of how that's going to play out, because I just can't foresee how they might arrive at it.
Well, obviously, Logan Paul betrays The Miz, and The Miz gets beaten. He always loses it. Yeah. And then...
getting it with it. I'm with it.
And then celebrating. Logan Paul's like, and runs up the ramp with the Mysterios. And he goes, sorry, I'm just distracted by Sid here. Stare. And he goes, you know what you should do? You know what me and what's his brother called? The real bell end. Jake, what we do sometimes is we do like, you know, chicken fights. We put him on the shoulders. So you should do that with your dad. Does that. Electric chairs, the old brick on the ramp. And then that is real WrestleMania backlash, because they get to run this match again, but with... Yeah. Sid, your thoughts?
I'm just going on Twitter, mate. Shall I read out the first tweet I see, regardless of who it is and what it is?
Oh, this is dangerous, this.
Oh, it's a good account, this. Okay. It's a Hollywood Hangman, Adam Page, Pierce parody. Is Tony Storm's 90 Day up yet, he asks? Presumably because he wants to see her on AEW television.
In the mic stole this, Rollins complained to Postman Pierce and Sonya Deville and cackled. And then they said Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar will be on Raw next week because it's the go-home for WrestleMania, presumably. Then we got a 2-on-1 handicap match. It was Apollo Crews and Commander Aziz versus Big George Omos, who's just been wrecking dudes, particularly these dudes, for fun. And guess what? He did it again. Despite the fact Apollo and Aziz attacked Omos before the match, he battered them both. Scoop slam to Aziz from Omos. Crews gets hit with a press slam. Omos hit Crews with a tree slam and then smashed them, stacked them, pinned them both, sort of. The referee was like, well, that shoulders aren't down, but bollocks. No one can see that. Count it. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, Omos cuts a promo and dares anyone on Raw or at WrestleMania to step up to him. No matter who it was, they would get dominated. I couldn't believe... Have you seen the news about who he's probably facing at WrestleMania, Hamlet?
No. Go on.
Do you know this, Sidge?
I think I overheard you when you were recording the news.
Probably, because I was so astonished by this. Allegedly, more details on whatculture.com, of course, it will be Omos versus former WWE champion Bobby Lashley, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, what? Is he not? How's that going to? I mean, but how's it going to work?
I do quietly enjoy this gimmick of WWE kind of knowing full well they can't tell stories and acknowledging this in storylines by saying, well, something might happen at WrestleMania, might not. Three at this point. There's the Seth Rollins opponent. Mm-hmm. There's the Austin not being there. You'll turn up on the night. And now, I might have a match, but don't tell a story. Don't worry about that, guys. But we'll see.
Also, they still haven't, they're less than 2 weeks away, and they still haven't confirmed the United States Championship match between Damian Priest and Finn Balor.
That's a big loss.
Stop running angles. Literally on all three shows at this point, NXT 2.0 included, where people find 50 different ways to get onto WrestleMania when your central plot point is that Seth Rollins can't get on the show. Stop it. It's happening on every episode. Wrestlers are just being inserted or dropped into matches. It goes right the way back to Edge being like, I fancy a WrestleMania match. Watch it. This is before he went blue. You know, I just fancy a match. Like, this has been happening since the night after the Royal Rumble. There's been somebody every week just basically getting onto the card just by asking, just by walking into the right room. Seth Rollins has spent a month not being able to make it. On the same night that Omos has just been like, I'll have a match, go on then.
Just do what Cena did, just get pissed on the front row. Not difficult.
Ridiculous. Right. I love Cena coming. I still like fondly remember, even though obviously what we got was very different to what we would have done had there been no pandemic, but how little Bray Wyatt looked when Cena was like, guess there's no space on the card for me this year. It's going to be hitting the old dirty trail. And then Bray, fresh off getting smashed by Goldberg with his, still had his Fiend jacket on.
Yo.
Who does that? You. Cena said, okay, let's go to war. Fiend. Me and you with a Fiend.
Then we got the promo, the return of AJ Styles to he said he's been missing for the last 2 weeks and he's missed out on stuff whilst he's been away recovering from his injuries. He watched the replay of what Edge did to him over and over while sitting at home. He just wanted to be alone and didn't want to be around his wife and kids. I've just been
watching the Edge AJ Styles attack over and over.
Styles talked about watching Edge's promos with mood lighting over the past 2 weeks, but he didn't care. He wasn't here for answers. He was here to kick Edge's teeth down his throat, and Edge is going to get the Bulldog Styles at WrestleMania. But he called him out for a fight right now. No Edge, though, so Styles called him a coward. Out comes Rollins, the crowd chant for Cody, and Rollins tells him to settle down. Rumors don't make moments. He was just living for his WrestleMania moment, he said.
You think bastard that can't improvise? Yes, they do. That's what they all are. That's what this whole company is. You're crap.
Well, rubbish.
When we're out there, I got him. I cut that right off. Hack. Absolute hack.
Styles told him to cut the crap. He wanted to know why he was out there. And Rollins said he was concerned for the health and well-being of AJ Styles. Are you even capable of facing Edge, he asks. Maybe you should go home, hug his wife. His wife called again. Oh, yeah. Wendy Styles and his kid, Baby Styles. Fully recover and then maybe come back after WrestleMania instead. Rollins will take care of Edge there. But Styles said, you ain't taking my spot. If I can walk, I'll face Edge. And Rollins goes, oh, only if you can walk, eh? But Styles says, I know what you're trying to do. And Rollins asked the crowd if they want to see AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins tonight. AJ says he'd do what Rollins couldn't do, and that is destroy Edge. And once he's done with that, then he'd come back to Rollins. But out come Postman Pierce and Sonya Deville, and they just made the match. They just said, yeah, all right, yeah, if Rollins wins, he replaces AJ Styles at WrestleMania. And so Rollins was being a cocky twat, and then Styles chinned him. Sige?
So we got, this is the bit with Deville and Pierce, yeah?
Yeah.
Right. I hate this so much. Part of the problem with WWE discourse is that a lot of thick people are too thick to realize how stupid this company is. The idea, when you are building towards a destination show, the ultimate destination show, the granddaddy of them all, WrestleMania, is that ideally you want the audience to invest in the matches. You want the audience to invest in matches that you are promoting as a big major deal that you simply cannot miss, or else you won't have any fun. You won't be involved in the community of any wrestling fandom. You'll kick yourself for missing this amazing thing that's going to happen. Mm. You can't miss it. Buy it on Peacock. It's streaming live for a bargain price. Don't miss this. This match is going to be incredible. Deville and Pierce. Oh, I could change it. You can change it if you want.
CM Punk versus MJF at Revolution. It's coming up. Well, unless, of course, MJF loses to one of the Boulder guys, I suppose.
Oh, I might just change it, actually, if you're asking. No! Make me think this match is incredibly important. It's completely etched in stone, much less penned in on this card, because it's so great. It's going to be such a classic. The stakes are so high. They hate each other. The work itself is going to be amazing. You're going to see a fabulous back and forth, dramatic epic. Oh, yeah, we could change it. Can you imagine?
Rock Austin, but instead, you know, they're just going to replace Rock with, Lance Storm if he wins this match. It's just preposterous.
Like McGregor Mayweather, you're going to get the biggest pay-per-view record money fight ever. Oh, we might change it because someone asked. It's fitting that they don't understand that the sports entertainment empire is meant to be a wrestling promotion. You know what? Maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree here, because it isn't. It's not a wrestling promotion. One of these days, I'll get it through my thick head analyzing it within the parameters of it being a wrestling promotion. I don't even know what it is. All I know is that it's stupid and it attracts mostly stupid, vile people.
This could be my recent experiences talking, but Sidge especially, do you ever get that thing where you kind of like lose your arse on punishments with the kids? So like if they're being like naughty the night before, you're like, right, if you don't like settle down now and go to bed, there's going to be no switch tomorrow. But then you realise you've gone in too hot and the next day you kind of really need to put in the switch so you can just chill out and get 5 minutes to yourself. So you're like, right, what did I say? Remember, only an hour of switch. Actually, to be honest, I'm quite enjoying this break on my phone, just staring into space. I was like, right, definitely, this is the absolute last half an hour. No more, because then it's bath time, and then we're getting in the bath. Right, we're doing baths on Monday, but this is the last game on the Switch. I feel like Seth Rollins is being isolation parented by Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce by this point. No, you can have that chat show with Austin, but if you lose against Owens, that's it. Definitely no more. Nope, no more. Right, you can have this AJ Styles match, but that is. They're as sick as listening to it, meh, 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 as we all are. They're just like, what's going to get him off our back for fucking half an hour? Also, Wilbon, to answer your question from before, I'm pretty sure this is going to sound like more of a dig than I mean it to, but aren't all of AJ Styles' kids called AJ Styles? That's why he's got that big tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, AJ, come over here. It's just because you can only remember like three or four things at any one time. What were my kids doing before? Which one? AJ.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, we go backstage and there is Queen Zelina who's with Carmella. And she's not happy with her, basically. Carmella's just looking at her phone and not paying much attention. And Zelina's trying to get her head back in the game so they could concentrate, so they could retain the crucially important women's tag team titles at WrestleMania. And then she just gets more and more wound up and eventually grabs Carmella's phone and throws it away. And she calls her an ugly bridezilla. And Carmella calls Zelina a hobbit. And then Carmella slaps her and they brawl. And they have to be pulled apart. The tag champs can't coexist, guys. Anyway, this was followed after Styles moaned and complained in the boss's office with Natalya and Shayna Baszler versus Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan were all, of course, involved in that tag team title match at WrestleMania. Mid-match, Carmella comes out to moan to Corey Graves. he just gets distracted from the match. We all do, let's be honest. And in the end, Natalya and Shayna Baszler pin Liv Morgan after a heart attack. So why are they in the match then?
I don't know. Utterly bloody pointless. I don't know.
Anyway, post-match, Zelina attacks Ripley, twats her with the scepter. Carmella shoves Natalya into the steel steps and then super kicks Shayna Baszler. And then they get in the ring. Is there a confrontation? Swerve. They're on the same page all along. They hug. They smile. Ah, we got shown up here, Hamlet.
So the four wrestlers that went out there and had a meaningless match anyway, were having to go out there with the mind games being played on. It was like, whoa, the champions are weakened. This is our big opportunity tonight. If whichever one of us wins this match, we're going to be it's going to be a free hit against these weekend champions.
Well, only for them to win the mean.
Yeah, that's it. Perfect kind of way to build momentum. Only for the match to be completely meaningless, and then the mind games to be completely meaningless by the end of the meaningless match. The heart attack was particularly pointed as well, because I thought it was a really genuinely nice detail on last week's AEW Dynamite on a night where there wasn't only like. It was one of a couple of Bret Hart teases as AEW play their next long game with getting us all excited at the prospect of the Hitman coming in. We got an ever so slightly clunky heart attack from John Moxley and Dean Ambrose. John Moxley and Bryan Danielson, where they're so fantastic that nothing they do is clunky unless they mean it to be clunky. And this could be me being generous, but I genuinely give them the doubt that they're not yet a tag team. So they're trying to perfect this one tag team move. Just happens to be a heart attack. That's a nice touch, but they can't quite crack it yet, but they'll get there. They'll do it. Shayna Baszler and Natalya have been together 2 weeks and they've got it because Natalya does bread stuff. Like, in case you're ever wondering, is it a dad? No, it's her. Like, you know, like that's, they just get the heart attack, they win. They can already now call themselves, what, the top challengers in this bracket of loser makeshift teams that have been put together to fight for the belts? I mean, here's me, I'm campaigning for the ultimate loser makeshift team of Bayley and Asuka coming out in the night, just winning it anyway, because all of this is so fucking meaningless. But, what a rubbish... It's not a rubbish women's tag match. It's not a rubbish women's tag division. It's a rubbish women's division, and still not enough people are talking about that.
I can't remember a single bloody thing that happened to you, if I'm being perfectly honest. I cannot remember a thing about it.
Fair enough. We'll move on instead to Becky Lynch, who came out after they recapped, obviously, the throat trauma. I forget what the exact terminology they used for Bianca Belair here. Outcomes. Becky Lynch, I think, cutting the promo she was meant to cut after SummerSlam. Weird one, this. Crap. Like months and months too late. Anyway,
dribble.
What does it profit a man, Michael Sidgwick, to gain the world but lose their soul?
The world? I mean, she's answered her own question there.
She talked about, you know, losing, not losing, but the months she didn't hold the championship, not because she was pinned or beaten, but because she was forced to surrender it. She forced the word symphony in here, and it felt very
edge.
And just like, oh, well, if we can use this word, then that means AW can't use it. Like, that's not how words work, but still. She said she knew she would do whatever it took to get it back. Again, she repeated that phrase about profiting.
What does a profit a man? I can't do accents.
this championship meant everything. She had power if she held it. She had glory. She was holding the prize that was at the top of the mountain.
And, there you go.
She returned, but the crowd had instead...
The prophet man!
...chosen Bianca Belair over her. And so she had to sell her soul for the title. Belair didn't have what it took to beat Becky Lynch. She could even damage her throat, but Lynch had damaged her worse. And Belair hurt her by accident, but Lynch did it deliberately. She said she came here this week to take Bianca Belair's hair, but Bianca Belair wasn't here tonight. She couldn't risk losing her soul. Lynch had already sold hers, and she would show Belair what she stood to profit at WrestleMania if she could make it.
A lot of ponderous drivel, a lot of pretentious and insulting are the two words I would use to describe this promo.
Well, there's no edge promo this week, so they had to do it somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. This for your consideration stuff absolutely stinks. It is garbage. I can't fathom it. Between Edge, Seth Rollins, and Becky Lynch, whose earlier work in their careers I've loved, legitimately, loved at various points. What the three of them are doing right now is absolute disappearing of their own arsehole rubbish that is just so laughably bad in terms of what they're trying to accomplish and how far away they are from that goal. This was so pretentious. She even referred to it as my precious. It's like, what, is it 2001? Sorry, are you Gollum? Like, what's this?
Well, there was a Hobbit reference earlier, so...
Yeah. Someone's watched Lord of the Rings. This really just pissed me
off.
Some
people wish they hadn't.
I just thought it was a cringe. A cringe promo with a Gollum reference with this ridiculous thing that they've read on, like, a writer's been round to one of their mates' walls, like, live, laugh, love. What does a ponder of man, whatever... Ah, that's clever. I'm going to say that. I'm going to make Becky Lynch say that five times. And they also had the nerve to say, you chose Bianca Belair. No, we didn't. Don't lie to me. I don't even that bothered. I'm numb.
I like the idea of the live laugh
preview yesterday, and you effectively called this. It's a pretentious promo. No sign of Bianca Belair seen.
That prospect of like them being inspired by a live, laugh, love thing hanging in someone's house as well. They're like, Bianca Belair comes out next week and it's like, Becky Lynch, I think you're fueled by the title. Well, I'm fueled by coffee and Prosecco.
When it comes to WrestleMania, you will take only photos and leave only footprints. So,
what time is it? Vino o'clock.
Oh, I'm tired. Nothing like a good gin gone. So.
This was rubbish in content and execution. And I think, like, you made a key sort of analytical point before we even got to the review of it, Will Bourne. Where was this sort of 8 months ago? It's one thing for it to win it and then try and be big time Bex to get the new character over. But this was a reminder that they've sort of done this feud. They've asked everybody to just be like, yeah, pretend that like 3 months, SummerSlam and 3 months after it didn't happen. And then we'll do it again. And because somebody on Twitter is going to be like, oh, it's a story they were telling the whole time. This was in the wrong place, and it was pretty poor as well.
I hate car stickers, right, at the best of times.
No, you don't.
Well, if the right one comes along, then absolutely, I'll get it. And if she lets
me. You are a car sticker.
But I saw one yesterday that said, powered by goblin farts.
Yeah. He loves it.
And I thought, what have you seen that? I thought, need that on the old punto. That's what we need. Ridiculous.
You pop. Don't tell me you didn't pop. I just heard it. You like Becky Lynch?
Hey, you remember... It's an old day. Yes, it's got that to come. Don't worry. There's a tease for you.
Old man Champa sat on the chair. Good friends are like the stars in the sky. You don't always see them, but they're always there. Ain't that right, Johnny?
Right, Austin Theory is backstage with...
Just an illusion caused by the world spinning around. I don't know why she's playing the lips in Old Man Champa's voice on that.
Sarah.
Oh, I love hanging out with my friends. Most people are psychiatrists.
Austin Theory's there with Sarah Schreiber, and he's happy about Pat McAfee's apology that we got on SmackDown, where he said, "I'm sorry, you're such a little bitch," basically. But he's taking the W there. And Theory said McAfee's a dumb jock who had no business stepping in the ring with him. He could even have a word with Mr. McMahon and then McAfee wouldn't have a job anymore. And he said, he gets asked about his match with Finn Balor tonight. And he said, my phone's basically full up. My storage is full with photos of selfies of me after I've beaten up Finn Balor. But don't worry, I'll take a few more tonight. But before we got Finn Balor versus Austin Theory, Michael Hamflett, Veer Mahan, is coming on April 4th.
Love this, right? Because... Veer Mahan is already a bigger star than 95% of the WWE main roster, because while all of them run around like feckless, headless chickens desperate to get onto WrestleMania, he doesn't give a single... He'll just turn up the next day. He'll be like, I don't need WrestleMania. Who does, really? Like, he'll just rock up on his own date. You know, it's funny. Like, Cedric made this point earlier on about all of these like half-cut teases about wrestlers that may or may not be at WrestleMania. It's odd to me that of all the ones they've left off, it's the mean guy, because I don't think anybody would have kicked off had he have appeared at WrestleMania, or like if that flashed up on the screen, Veer Mahan has come. People would have a good chuckle over it, and he's come at WrestleMania and all that sort of stuff. This was one of the few ones that I think you genuinely probably could have left as the tease. What, they're expecting to draw a number out of him or something on the post-WrestleMania Raw? is that how successful this odd, like, social media meme campaign has been, that they think now that they're going to get some tacked on audience on what is traditionally one of their like more viewed Raws of the year anyway? That's it. This is what it is. You know, it's in the old way of doing things that you would expect this. That's what's strange. WWE's so broken and backwards now that this feels weirder than it used to have done, when that was the whole point. You would start someone's trajectory. Brock Lesnar debuted the night after WrestleMania because that meant he had a full year to get to the main event of his first one, and it worked a treat. I'm not comparing Veer Mahan to Brock Lesnar, but that used to be how it was always done. But WWE has gone so strange now that it feels odd that they've given you a date.
I don't care anymore.
No.
They obviously don't like him that much.
I was going to say, I said this on the news, this wasn't the plan all along, was
no,
it?
No.
But yeah. I'm going to be very excited to see what happens on April the 4th. And then we got the match, Finn Balor versus Austin Theory, which also featured Pat McAfee coming out to cheer on and quite possibly cheer on Finn Balor and distract Austin Theory. Back and forth early on, Theory gets knocked out of the ring and McAfee does his weird sort of crotch chop thing that he does, which allows Balor to drop kick Theory into the barricade to take us to a break. When we come back, Theory's in control, but McAfee's there cheering on Balor, who fights back, running forearm, double foot stomp. But then they brawl to the outside, and Theory starts slamming Finn Balor's head against the announce table and jaw-jacking with Pat McAfee. That distraction allows Balor to recover and bounce Theory's head off the table instead. Gets him back in the ring, goes for the coup de grace, but Theory dodges it. Again, McAfee distracts Theory, jumping up on the apron, and they exchange counters. Theory manages eventually to hit the ATL for a near fall, but then Theory finally gets distracted once more by Pat McAfee and rolled up by Finn Balor Hamlet.
I love Pat McAfee, but there's no getting away from the fact that all of this is just mid as hell, isn't it? This Pat McAfee, Austin Theory stuff, every interaction they have has yet to feel like it's only got even the tiniest bit of seasoning because McAfee's involved. That's the only reason this has got any spice to it. And even then, I'd say that's probably subjective and I wouldn't blame anybody for feeling less than nothing for this. Vince McMahon, in every sense, has pulled himself completely away from this. You know, like you don't see him really hanging out with Austin Theory for multiple segments a night anymore. There's no follow-up on anything that happened on his appearance on the Pat McAfee show. You were just watching two people that, like, they have a dispute, right? That's mm-hmm. fine. They don't like each other and they're going to wrestle at WrestleMania as a result. And it's only really special because Pat McAfee was invited on at the show by Vince and Austin Theory is playing out some sort of strange jealousy. There's just not a lot of heat to it. And that's fine when you're running a B-show, but it doesn't really feel becoming of what they're trying to sell you on WrestleMania.
I've honestly, there's no thoughts on the match. We know it was a backdrop to do Pat McAfee stuff. I found him throughout this match, as I pretty much did on his SmackDown appearance in ring last week, like excruciatingly obnoxious. Excruciatingly obnoxious, which, funnily enough, worked tremendously well when he was playing heel. I hate him as a babyface. I hate him as this babyface. The stuff, he looked like a clown out there doing that stuff with his arms next to his cock. I just thought he was so obnoxious that I just somehow, Austin Theory emerged as the babyface for me. I don't know. I think he's wasted in this babyface role for me. I just don't like him in it at all.
We got a clip from WrestleMania 2017 with Gronk getting involved and with Jinder Mahal. I get it. It's like, oh, it's nearly WrestleMania. Do you remember when this happened at WrestleMania? Well, my favorite thing at the moment is now half the clips they have to show, they have to be like, well, we can't show that bit because that's a released wrestler. We can't show that bit. So, like, what we saw was Gronk interfering in a battle royal that had no finish, basically. Because they're not going to show Mojo Rawley, wouldn't it? Because he's, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Can't show Brett versus Owen? Oh, no, because they're going to be all elite, effectively. They can't show good things because they've rubbished their own history.
Right, Sige. Shoes, please. Shoes. Chad Gable.
Skip.
Can I quickly mention, I do love the fact that they're on a Snickers advert now.
We're skipping and skip. They're all on Snickers adverts, man. It's not special.
Yeah, Randy Orton and Riddle beat Alpha Academy after Riddle flipped out of a German suplex and hit a Gable skip with the bro Derek. Right, enough all this. It's now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The five-star review.
Nailed it! And this week's five-star review is brought to you by Fresh from the Daily. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, you can do so by subscribing to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, leaving us a five-star review, and suggesting something for us to watch instead of a god-awful Raw segment or match. And Fresh from the Daily writes, I'm not sure which I enjoy more, the wrestling insight or the humor these guys pull off, both marvelous. These guys pull off both marvelously. Really enjoy listening every day. For a five-star review, could you review a 2016 Raw segment in which Anderson and Gallows mock the New Day by bringing in the Old Day. Three guys dressed as really old, Kofi, Big E, and Xavier. Thanks, guys. Thanks to you, Fresh from the Daily. Take us back to September 5th, 2016, Michael Hamlet. What was going on back then?
The Good Brothers, as you can probably guess, were feuding endlessly with the New Day. The New Day were in the middle still of their like record-setting tag title runs. They would have these quite elongated programs with teams because they were never going to lose the belts. So you had to find ways to have them lose singles matches and come up with like wacky storylines, which, to be fair, the New Day polished a lot of turds over that period specifically, as they still continue to. Now, this was from the same angle where, remember when the Good Brothers were dressed as doctors and they had...
I was going to say, was this before or after the Balls in a Jar?
It was after Bollocks in a Jar, but it was Bollocks on television instead. you know, what struck me more about this, because you can see the construct of all of this from the segment we're about to review. It doesn't need much backstory. It doesn't have much front story because the segment's too new. We provide backstory when the segment's old enough that WWE still cared about things like backstory. This is well into the stuff just happens period of WWE. But what I found interesting about this, just before we dive into this one specifically, is this was right around the time that I was like starting freelancing for What Culture before I started permanently. I think Sidgwick had not long started as well. So we're well in the content realm from here onwards. And it felt like once a year, WWE would do a segment that was so bad that it became that year's really bad segment. All Day was one. This Is Your Life, Bailey was another. Bobby's Sisters was another. And I think they were the three sequential years where you're like, what happens this one week a year where they do something hideous? That's every week all the time. You don't get that anymore because that is once a week all year. Like every single week there is something as bad as this. But now the standards are so low, the bar is so low within WWE and indeed with us, I guess, as a fan base with our expectations, that you no longer have that one thing like below all the rest. It's just, oh yeah, that was just something that happened on Raw or SmackDown once a week. There's an Old Day on the Raw that we are talking about today. You know, there's probably more than one. This was rubbish, but was it really any more rubbish than like the rubbish segment on this show or last week's SmackDown or last week's Raw?
So, yeah, Gallows and Anderson are in the ring and they're cutting a promo saying, "We're a retirement specialist. After retiring the Dudley Boys, we now have our sights set on retiring the New Day as Raw Tag Team Champions at Clash of Champions. So we're here to prove the New Day that they can find just as much fulfillment in retirement as they do as the tag champs. So tonight we want to show you exactly what the New Day is like under our care in the future. Without further ado, the Old Day." And the music hits, but it's different music, Sidge. This time it goes, "It's an old day. Yes, it is." Not funny, that at all. Not funny. It's a little bit funny.
Imagine slowing down somebody's catchphrase to a ludicrous degree for a bit. imagine anybody doing that.
So three lads with grey hair come out. One's got a stick, one's got a walker. They've got tennis balls on the bottom, and one's driving a motability scooter, basically. And they say, "Oh, Kofi, those suspenders are so booty." Remember when they tried to get that over? That was a thing, wasn't it, for a bit? And Gallows asks what's happened to them once they eventually... There's edits in here. We're watching the WWE YouTube version because I'm not watching the whole bloody thing. Jesus Christ, I put these through boys through enough. One of the New Day, which one was meant to be, says, "Well, the Clash of Champions, you guys beat the pee-pee out of us."
Is this the NXT preview? Or the champa voice?
And poor Carl Anderson says, whoa, pee-pee? What do you mean, pee-pee?" And the other guy goes, "Well, right, I done said it, the power of volatility." And they go, "Oh, the P-O-P.
P-O-P.
All right." And then Dr. Woods is asked how they've been treated in the future, but Hamlet, he can't hear because he's old and he's got hair and earwax and he's got a trumpet to put in his ear like he's something from the 1800s or something.
Massive champa.
This is when the New Day dropped, or at least on our version. I think it went on for about 3 more hours in my memory of this segment. The New Day come out and Kofi's saying, "Oh, we can't get involved here. We can't touch ourselves from the future. You can't touch someone from the future. It'll destroy the WWE universe.
If only."
No. And Xavier Woods, God, I can't wait till he's back on telly, says, "Why don't we just get in the ring and beat up the ball, guys?" So they go to do that. And of course, the club bail and the New Day start dancing in the ring instead. And then one of the Old Day, for some reason, just clocks Big E on the back with his stick. It doesn't do anything, of course. And I just love Big E, man. Like, he doesn't just turn around and go, "Oh, I'm going to kill you." He stops his friends from dancing and then doesn't say, one of those bellends just twatted me with the stick. He gesticulates till they understand he just hit me. And they go, "Oh, why have you done that?" And they confront them and the Old Day chuck the stick about. "No, it was him. Oh, no, it was him." And before they properly beat him up, I did like Kofi's line, take that horn off. That's a good piece of merchandise.
You didn't like the line, Wilborn?
They beat them all up. One of them can't even go over the top rope properly. And the New Day celebrate. Thoughts, Sige?
Thoughts are that this is the most low effort 5-star review of all time because this is simply so terrible that we can't sell it. That's the general vibe, isn't it? Were they going
rubbish?
They must have known this is rubbish as well. So why did they do it? even for them, this is not something they thought was amusing in any way. So why did they do this? Is it like cynical engagement? Like, if we do something so bad, people will talk about it in any pub's good pub, that sort of deal. Because no one possibly alive can think this is good. As those words come out of my mouth, I recall being in the same office as Adam Wilborn, who involuntarily pops with some of the patter when he's doing the notes.
It's an old day, yes it is.
Shut up! He's laughing at it! He was laughing at it before!
Good stuff, that.
You're an e-drone.
It was about 3 months earlier, I think, earlier. Might be later. This is not a request for us to review this, by the way. I'm just adding a bit of flavour to this, what is otherwise a fairly flavourless rundown of a terrible Raw segment. They did this themselves. The New Day put on... Remember the Time Machine one?
Mm-hmm.
I always get them confused.
Yeah, I don't know which came first.
Same period of time. Yeah, same title reign, same period of time, same people in the ring having to fill 15 to 20 minutes of millions of pounds worth of content space.
So we go to the comments section. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Daddy Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling, of course. The Perfect 10 sort of sums up, I think, everyone's thoughts on this. Well, Dadley's thoughts on this. Throughout this entire segment, just one sentence was going through my head. Why do I enjoy wrestling? This was a real low point. This was when they had a monopoly, didn't they, Sige? And it was just...
like, being the elite was only just happening a bit. Like, New Japan was great as well, but... Mm. Yeah, stuff on the indies popping off. NXT was great, but in terms of WWE, it just felt like this was your lot for the thing that everyone kind of talked about and... you can involve yourself in.
Mr. MSA writes, apart from this and the fact that the Shining Stars defeated Enzo and Cass, this Raw was pretty good.
I'm sure it wasn't. This Raw program at the time, I believe, was run by good guy Shane McMahon, who just wants to make a fair for the baby faces. Golden New Age.
This was also the time I saw some of these in the comments, but I didn't come be asked to mention them, where people were like, I think SmackDown have won it this week, guys, when it was just like, oh, which is better, Raw or SmackDown?
The only people who give a toss about WWE things are YouTube commenters. And I've got a proof of that later on. Jesus Christ.
Okay. Muhammad Akbal writes, this segment was better than Bailey, This Is Your Life.
Good.
That's your bar.
That piss that smelled a little bit better than a shit. Just watch something else. If that is the curve against which you're measuring things, just get a new hobby.
Over to a new segment I'm liking to call Comments That Aged Like Milk. Carbine Highlights writes, Old Day should be inducted into the 27 Hall of Fame with James Ellsworth. So there's that. KO Saito, 2 years ago.
Sige, why? What, 2 years ago? Why?
Clarifies this. From one bad segment to another, the Old Day later became Bobby Lashley's sisters. Did they?
No, it was three different black men.
Because one of them was...
Max Caster.
Yeah.
Was one of Bobby Lashley's sisters. Maybe the two groups could combine and create the new Nation of Domination. That's how these YouTube commenters think all of this works. It's absolutely incredible. They are bad people.
Yeah. Final comment, once again, does not reflect the views of myself, Daddy Boys, or anyone What Culture Wrestling, comes from My Name Is Awards, who writes, you know what this crowd and Harambe have in common? They're both dead. Nice to hear some Harambe patter a few years on. Remember Harambe? That was a thing for a bit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I love that being one day the topic of a WWE writers' room in about 5 years' time. Remember Harambe on a whiteboard.
On that board. Yeah. About Harambe? Like... Oh, dear. Well, if you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, then please do so by subscribing to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes. And just like Fresh from the Deluge did, leaving us a 5-star review, or you could email them to me, of course. Please do the 5-star rating on iTunes because it helps us. Well, stay number one, let's be honest. Or you can do it on Spotify, the 5-star rating, of course. But you can also email me a suggested review, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. Where are we? Oh, yeah. The Raw Tag Team Champions have just defeated Alpha Academy.
Yeah, we skipped it.
Yeah, post-match, though. That was the match we skipped. Post-match, Otis hits Orton over the barricade, goes to give Riddle a Vader bomb, but in come the Street Profits, who make the save and then beat him up. Angelo Dawkins hits him with a spine buster, and Montez Ford hit him with a frog splash because it's going to be a triple threat at WrestleMania. I'm genuinely looking forward to this, to be fair. Hamlet, did you know that me and Sid have worked out a foolproof way to work out whether or not a match is good?
In WWE?
Oh, yeah, in WWE.
Go on.
Run us through it, Sid.
So we developed this on the Raw preview last night. Matches involving one people don't happen unless...
It's Randy Orton RKOing himself because he's the only legend left.
Of course.
Matches involving two people on television usually go to a DQ if they're any good. More on that later. And on pay-per-view, let's face it, they're not as good as they would be if they were presented by a different promotion because they're just the pattern style. Triple threats, you get some good ones, but mostly it's prolonged selling on the outside. And it breaks suspension of disbelief because they sell for longer than they would ordinarily for given moves because the genre of the match. You know this, I know this.
Yeah.
Tag matches, the form's been decent this year, but, you know, never let recent form fool you.
No, ooh, tags.
Generally, they don't care about tag team wrestling. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, no. You get to 5, you fail 5 ways, awesome. You get to 6 and your six-pack challenges and your multi-man ladder matches is great. It could probably... apply that logic or extend that logic to 6, 7, 8, all the way up to 29, but the Rumbles suck now, so 30 is the cut off. So anywhere between 5 and 29 wrestlers in a WWE ring is good. Anything else is bad?
You've done the maths.
Gable Stevenson gets congratulated on winning. He's Mr. Two-Time winning the NCAA championship and presumably... hanging up his boots or leaving them behind or whatever, and he's going to come in. No pressure, kid, but you're the new Kurt Angle, basically. Then we got some very silly 24/7 championship stuff. Dana Brooke and Reggie tag team match against Tamina and Akira Tozawa. We see backstage earlier on, Tamina chokes Akira Tozawa and implies, do you mean sex? No, I mean the 24/7 title. And we start off with a chicken fight because of course we do.
He loves it, man.
Love a chicken fight. And Dana Brooks on Reggie's shoulders, but of course Akira Tozawa can't lift.
Stop telling me when you love it.
I started a bit and now I'm laughing.
Like the silence that greeted this, by the way, it was like Orton Cena levels of stuff, wasn't it? They're pointing at the sign like this. The hot crowd went dead for this chicken fight, and you got Wilborn pissed himself out. I like when they flipped it.
It's funny you should say that. Come back to me once you've done the recap.
Okay. So Tozawa goes on Tamina's shoulders and Dana kicks Tamina. I don't know. Tamina kicks Reggie in the ribs or something. There's a brawl, but Tamina falls face first into Kira Tozawa's crotch and gives him a low blow, which is quite funny as well. And the best bit of all was they were so obsessed with showing Kira Tozawa getting hit in the bollocks, they missed the pinfall. It was in a little box in the corner. What do you want to say about this?
Well, Hamlet accurately pointed out the absolute pin drop silence in this arena, okay? Imagine if certain YouTube commenters were in that arena and what that would sound like. So, I'll level with you. After the first hour, I thought, it's enough of a full-length Raw for me. I'm going to skip around on YouTube to get the condensed version of the 9-minute matches with no finishes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll watch the main event in full because I, you know, I've got kids that I have to preemptively wake up in front of, you know, the whole deal. So I watched this 24/7 stuff on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Skip the entrances, get the gist. But I want to have comments because I'm thinking there's going to be a WWE fan who thinks this is good. Not a single soul in that arena reacted, right?
Oh, no.
My thought is that R-Truth and Tozawa as a tag team together, it would be the most hilarious tag team ever. I left emoji 87 likes. I died laughing. Rest in peace, Courtney. When Tamina landed on Tozawa, the way he screamed and his face expression was priceless.
Jeez.
When she fell into him and screamed, I legit died laughing. Honestly, the storyline has been funny as hell. I'm really loving the storyline. Now, please let it continue. You gotta love how the joke title is one of the best storylines right now. That was from a Ryan S. That's too obvious. We'll call him R. Satin. This match was like watching the Looney Tunes cry, laugh, cry, laugh, cry, laugh emoji. I swear to God, right?
He's real.
Those are real YouTube comments.
I can see you reading them. I still can't believe it.
Can you imagine, as luck would have it, if those six people were like in this arena dying laughing, you would just hear silence and then just from various pockets of the crowd. Can you imagine? Why aren't these people at the arena?
Yeah.
King Power Fox Jamie Vardy gives it 5 stars on Cage Match. could it be?
Right.
How can you possibly find it? Watch comedy programs.
Yeah. Main event time, AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins. They were nearly 23 minutes here.
For a DQ.
To go to a DQ.
Absolute piss take.
Honestly, my least favorite thing in this world is 3¾-star WWE matches on television. I hate them.
Mm.
Objectively good, in a way, things that I hate.
Mm.
Yeah, they were really Charlotte one. Remember the Charlotte one last year? Like the Charlotte was like, you almost never get a good Charlotte match anymore.
Oh, and then she was having
like a really decent one. And she's like, no finish. Save for the pig.
25 Do minutes it. And then Charlotte Flair has got a chair out and started wailing on her.
My favorite is around the Charlotte stuff as well. Is like originally when she like won the Rumble and she was going to face Rhea Ripley, you were like, all right, it's a WWE, so there's going to be some bollocks. But Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair on paper, money. And it right up until the end, and then they have all those matches, and they're all just there. And I mean, the WrestleMania one was enjoyable, obviously, but they just keep doing it. Do you remember that one they suddenly had on? I can't remember what even pay per view it was, pamphlet, but where it was something like, wait a second, when they just went, oh, let's just beat the crap out of each other. We're like, oh, really? Ripley Charlotte play good again. That's what it takes because we get subjected to bollocks like this all the time. Yeah, they work well together. It's Seth Rollins and AJ Styles. Of course they did. Springboard forearm outside the ring to take us to a break from AJ Styles. Rollins takes over, hitting a neck breaker over the middle rope. A bit where Styles goes face first into the buckle sounded awful because his leg connected with it, thankfully, not his head. Take notes, Bill. Rollins takes control. Suicide dive takes us to another break. He taunts Styles and smacks him, but that wakes Styles up and he fires back and hits him with a fireman's carry neck breaker for a two. Rollins jackknifes him for two. Styles gets a face buster and hits him with that for another near fall. Rollins blocks the Styles clash, rolling elbow, falcon arrow. That gets a two count. Styles suplexes Rollins into the turnbuckle, goes for the phenomenal forearm, but Rollins super kicks him midair. Follows up with a buckle bomb, goes for the frog splash, but Styles gets his knees up. Styles sets up with a forearm and then just gets smashed in the back by Edge. DQ, which means, of course, AJ Styles wins. Rollins loses. He is not going to WrestleMania. And Rollins is pleading with the referee.
I'm sorry. I've just saw your note. Don't say it.
No, that's not my writing, by the way. Okay. Rollins grabs the mic and yells, this is... I've already got enough work to do today. BS, basically, but they obviously bleep the S. Well, the first S they definitely bleep. Some of them they definitely didn't. And he says Raw won't happen next week. He's got a mic now until he gets to WrestleMania. And he throws a huge tantrum around ringside. He rips he tips the table over. He rips stuff off the turnbuckle, the posts and what have you. And he just throws a right paddy, basically, Sidge, to close out this show.
Yeah. Again, I hate the fact that this match happened, so I had no emotional investment in it to begin with. A lot of the counter-driven work was as great, technically, as one would expect from performers of this caliber. However, wrestling isn't about moves. It isn't about moves executed well. It's about when to do it and if you should care about the moves. That's what it's all about. The when to do it in terms of the dramatic structure of the match, all very sound. Of course it was. It's these two. But then you realize, why am I watching these guys fight? So instantly you're a bit numb to it. And then Seth Rollins, with his body language, expressed why he was wrestling. And I thought it was very hammy. To some, oh my God, I'm not going to. The joke's going to be on the guy who laughs. Look at the irony of that.
The joke's going to be on the jokester, you see.
Damn, <that joke. laughs> So I just hated his face, quite frankly, during large portions of this match, which, again, WWE, terrible stuff welded onto great wrestling. It was welded on so suffocatingly tight that I just felt removed from it.
Yeah, this was too good for the work was too good for the intent of the match, which was to sell that Seth Rollins can't get at WrestleMania and that Edge is going to eventually attack AJ Styles. But it wasn't good enough for you to forgive just a dreadful, like, key finish at the end. So it was neither one nor the other. Seth Rollins and AJ Styles had I like both guys, but I love neither of them. And yet they had an absolutely fantastic match at Money in the Bank 2019 for Seth Rollins' Universal title. A total ripper when you kind of thought that neither of them were going to be able to wrestle outside of WWE's formula. Really, really good. I recommend it now from both of them. This wasn't as good as that. And for the finish that you were getting, it kind of needed to be better. And they just, it's not on them, but it never got there. The distinct feeling by the halfway mark that you felt like you were wasting your time. And the worst thing is when you're watching it live, you don't know it's the halfway mark. So not an ideal way for the show to end, and I don't think there's a it's the Cody buzz is it's not buzz, but it's not buzz. You know, it's like people want to see. I cannot wait to watch it happen, whatever it is that happens, but I don't feel like I'm being taken along on a hype train towards it.
Yeah, intriguing to see what they do next week. They have stacked the show. We'll be previewing it, of course, on Monday. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for that. And let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And you can pre-order your WrestleMania beers, if you're living in Europe, at TopRopeBrewing.com, as I said. We will be back later on today with the NXT preview. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.